Once a year, I choose a musical artist whose life and art has been a source of inspiration, not only for myself, but for the population. The first year here at Beacon, I chose Leonard Cohen. Last year, it was Bruce Cockburn. And this year, it's Joni Mitchell. I would say it's also significant that all these artists are multi-talented, spiritually and socially committed, and all Canadian. Being a Canadian is truly important to me. Figuring out who I am, searching for and delving into the question and the experience of Canadian identity has been part of my life's journey. No doubt influenced by my family, I grew up with the audioscape of the CBC radio in the background and CBC television, listening to Canadian folk singers and Canadian bands like Chilliwack and singers like Katie Lang, who I might do next year, absorbing Canadian artists like Quebec's Alfred Pellin, BC's Emily Carr, the Group of Seven, Attila Richard Lukacs, and George Littlechild, and because I spent so many years in Saskatchewan, also Joe Fafard. And I can only touch on the incredible writers in this country, like Margaret Atwood. This week I was listening to the CBC and Canada Reads, and having read that incredible book, Rue, what extraordinary stories we have to tell. I've lived and worked in 6 of the 10 provinces, and I love this land. I've known it through living in the vivid seasons, through the artists who sing and write and paint like Joni Mitchell, so that I might know myself. Joni Mitchell is one of Canada's most iconic and influential songwriters and singers. Over the course of her 5-decade career, she's produced 19 studio albums, 2 live albums, and a handful of compilation albums. She's an accomplished writer and painter, as I said, who designs all her own album covers, and her artwork has been exhibited around the world. Her accomplishments are many, and so are her awards. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1997, Order of Canada in 96. In 2002, she was appointed Companion to the Order of Canada, which is the highest distinction possible for an artist in Canada. Grammy Lifetime Achievement in 2002. Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2007, the same year she released her last album, or maybe I should say her latest, called Shine. In 2012, she collaborated with the Alberta Ballet to work on a dance piece called The Fiddle and the Drum. And in 2014, she released a 4-disc set of some of her most iconic songs. Joni splits her time between her home in LA and on the Sunshine Coast of British Columbia. I'm probably the only one in the room here who didn't know that since 1971, when she bought 40 acres north of Half Moon Bay on the Sunshine Coast, that she's been part of our British Columbia community. Joni Mitchell was on the cusp of transformation in 1969 when she wrote the song Both Sides Now. She has described it as a meditation on reality and fantasy. In her own words, an idea that is so big, it seems like I just scratched the surface of it. I invite the choir forward to sing Both Sides Now. Up and down, give and take, win and lose. A meditation on clouds and love and life. A meditation on Joni Mitchell. She was born in Alberta, 1943. Roberta Joan Anderson, the daughter of Myrtle and William. Her dad was with the Canadian Air Force, and they moved around a fair bit during the war, from base to base. And after the war, Bill became a grocer. And they lived in Maidstone. Do you know where that is? Maidstone in North Battleford. Now you know where that is. I think, I hope, Saskatchewan. Northern Saskatchewan. A very tiny town, as Joni said. Two blocks, one church, one hotel kind of town. And they were one of the very few white families in northern Saskatchewan in those days. Despite the small town of rural life, Joni was influenced by her mom, who rather than reading the Bible to her, read her Shakespeare, and her father, who loved music. He played a trumpet in the local band. In their house, there were six record albums. Her mom had three, her dad had three. Her mom had three romantic symphonies like Clair de Lune, and her father had three trumpet albums. Down. Around six or seven, she took up the piano, but when her music teacher insisted that she had to learn how to read the music and play the way the teacher wanted her to play, Joni said no, a word she used a lot in her life. Headstrong, independent thinking, fiercely protective of her creative experience, even at that young age, those attributes were part of her personality. Her music teacher rapped her knuckles with a ruler, and she walked out and didn't pick up the piano again for 10 years. At 8 years old, she contracted polio during the 1951 epidemic. She was sent to the hospital and told she might not ever walk again. For weeks, she was in this small room with only a boy who picked his nose, and she was told by her doctors, pointing at a room across the hall, that she might live her whole life in an iron lung. Her mother only visited her once. Her father never came to the hospital. When it was nearing Christmas time, the doctors told her that she just couldn't go home. So she says she started to sing Christmas carols at the top of her lungs. The boy in the next bed who picked his nose complained mightily. And she discovered two things about herself, that she could be a ham and that she could sing. The polio put a stop to her love of sports, but it began her love of dancing. At 9 years old, she started smoking cigarettes. And she says that was what initiated her desire to get a job. She needed to earn money to buy the smokes. So she collected newspapers for the florists and picked up pop bottles along the highway. And she has smoked her entire life. Up and down those early years, up and down for a strong-willed and stubborn woman, girl. She has always said what she wanted. She wanted to live her own life on her own terms. And the thread of this is a strong one through her life. Grade school in Saskatoon, another time of up and down, opportunity and frustration. Joni saw the education system from an early age as teaching you what you were supposed to think, not how to think. There was no liberty, she said, no liberty really for free thinking. In grade seven, she had one amazing radical teacher who challenged her. She was putting up her artwork in the halls of the school, and he came up to her and he said to her, he was an English teacher, he said, if you can create language through your artwork, then you can create art with words. And so she started to write for him. And she wrote and wrote, and when she handed it in, rather than when she got it back, having the accolades of which she had got a lot for her artwork, She saw the paper covered in red words. Word, which was cliche, 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 cliche. And this was exactly what she wanted. She wanted to be better than cliche. Joni Mitchell's career, a time of give and take, of love's illusions. Joni left home for art college in Calgary and then moved on to Toronto to test her talents in the local music scene. There were rules about who could play on the club stages at the time, and it cost $200 to join the union, which she didn't have. So she worked where she could. She worked in a women's wear section of the department store to try to earn some money. She played in church basements and at the YMCA halls. And one small scab club hired her. I think it was called the Purple Onion. And she sang there regularly, made enough money. The downside was that she got pregnant. And this was a time when being an unwed mother was not at all acceptable. She never ever told her parents, at least not for many, many, many years. She had the child, gave it up for adoption. That was a hard winter in Toronto. She lived only in the boarding house, hardly went out. I read one story of a man who lived across the hall from her and could hear her night after night after night singing in her room alone. After the baby was given away, she headed for Detroit and made a name for herself in the folk sing there. So well, in fact, that she created a name for herself that she was soon on her way to New York City. And there, she also made a significant impact. This is a description of Joni from her friend Malalka Maron from the recently released Joni Mitchell in Her Own Words. Malalka says, "The girl on the stage also seemed to be in no hurry to do anything but tune and retune her guitar, tune and retune. My cappuccino cup stood empty, and still she kept turning the knob of one string and then another, this way and that way, a bit higher and then a bit lower, with such intensity that, like a magnet, it drew you out of yourself. She turned to face the empty seats and leaned closer to the mic. She strummed a progression of chords with a surprisingly assertive hand, and they were unlike any chords I'd ever heard before. I found myself hanging on every note, and then she started to sing. From verse to verse, her song was like a kaleidoscope that splintered my perception, turned it round and round, then refocused to illuminate a reality I had not dared to see. Strikingly beautiful, uniquely talented, fiercely committed to her muse, Joni kept writing, composing, playing, being noticed, introduced, connected, loved. Her career began to accelerate. Judy Collins took both sides now. Chelsea Morning made huge hits from them for her own career. And then 2 years later, Joni released her own album, followed by 10 albums in 10 years, and became a major award-winning, top-of-the-chart singer-songwriter. She became an integral part of the musical soundscape of the 1970s. Joni was working with and or falling in love with Neil Young, James Taylor, David Crosby, Graham Nash, Bob Dylan, Kris Kristofferson, Leonard Cohen. The magazine Rolling Stone published a graphic of all her lovers that she was supposed to have had in this period of time, which deeply hurt her. Her personal life was lush and messy, and it was producing a great deal of creativity and some huge hits. These were the iconic years, the Woodstock years, the Laurel Canyon years in California, the years of free love, drugs, rock and roll, pop and folk music, and women's lib. Joni Mitchell was a strong woman before strong women were ordinary and common. David Crosby once said that, quote, Joni's about as humble as Mussolini. And Bob Dylan, with whom she had a complicated artistic rivalry, said, she was like a man. Not a compliment. All my battles were with the male egos, says Joni. I'm just looking for equality, not to dominate. I want to be able to control my vision. There are those moments when I wax feminine, and then I get walked on. As a creative person, it was always about art, the freedom to create, the protection of her inspiration. Win and lose. Loneliness, aging, and the cesspool of the music industry. There are always ways to win and lose in life. The one thing that seems pretty clear is that Joni Mitchell was not willing to lose her creativity to those in the professional music industry who had their own agendas and need to control her. Joni described the music industry as a cesspool, so to avoid drowning in it, she had to take control. Win. As an artist, she controlled her creations every step of the way. She produced all her own albums. This is amazing if you think of a 20-year-old. She retained creative control and all rights to the master copies of her work. She kept away anyone who would take over or introduce outside influences unless she chose. Protective of the joy in her work. She only worked with artists who were collaborators and who understood her way of working and could support her vision. She was tough, and she was clear. And if you didn't get it, she wouldn't waste your time or hers working with you. When starting a new song, going into the recording studio, Joni would sing all the parts for the other musicians because, of course, she never learned to write music. Right? So she memorized all the parts of all the instruments and sang them to the artists, who then wrote them down, transcribed them so that they could play them. She also had a unique understanding of music. Her power and her unique musical structuring was possible because she had never been formally taught. She had no rules to break. She had no idea when she was breaking the rules. Her music was created through an emotional architecture. She felt her way into the song, connecting one chord to the next through an emotional, intuitive feeling sense of the music of the song. She describes her life as an endless sus chords, chords that are musically unresolved, questioning chords. Or as she said in an interview with Rolling Stone, sus chords are like my whole life, questioning and unresolved. She had to fight her whole professional life to protect that creative impulse so that it could emerge and root and grow and not be twisted to fit into a prescribed box or manipulated to fit into a sound that could be commercially sold. This is perhaps why her music will last for a long, long time, and why this part of her life was a win. She lost at love. She says, I'm so hard to handle. I'm selfish and I'm sad. Now I've gone and lost the best baby I ever had from the river. I'm so hard to handle, I'm selfish and I'm sad. In 1994, she turned 51 and her 12-year marriage to bassist Larry Klein ended. It was the longest relationship she'd ever had. The daughter, who she had given up for adoption when she was 19, found her 32 years later. But they couldn't build a relationship that could endure. They tried, had a few years together, and then the relationship deteriorated. Part of the cost of making the choices to follow her muse and her talent today means that she has no family around her. She lost her health. In the same year that she released Turbulent Indigo, which won a Grammy for the best pop album of the year, she had a recurrence of her childhood polio. Then she acquired a strange illness, the controversial illness called Morgellons disease, which ignited her skin with pain so intense that she could not bear anything touching it. She also had recurring bouts of insomnia and depression. Joni says, "You have to rotate like a farmer." She said, "The artist needs time to let everything settle. There needs to be a period when the land rests, when the creative connections need resting." British Columbia, for part of her life, has been that place of retreat. It was where she retreated when the cesspool of the music industry overwhelmed her. It was and is the place she goes when she wants to paint and write, where she went when her heart was broken again and again and again. It is where she went when the pain of the Morgellons disease made her skin so painful she couldn't wear clothes, and when the recurrence of the childhood polio cramped her legs so badly she couldn't stand upright or walk. This was the land that she went looking for 25 years earlier, and when she found it, she had realized at the time, quote, "This land is going to be my companion for the rest of my life." The land was her companion. Just as the prairies had formed her as a young girl, and the urban centers of New York and LA formed her creative energies, the Canadian Northwest was her balm and comfort. Something's lost and something's gained in living every day. Her song, Both Sides Now, begins as a reflection on clouds, as if through the eyes of children, imagining the infinite possibilities of life, those ice cream castles in the air. But life is more than possibilities. There are two sides to everything. As we grow up, we see that the clouds also hold rain and bring storms, and they can wipe out crops and our dreams. And they can force us to make hard choices, giving things up, hanging on to the things that are essentially who we are, and the consequences of that choice. As we grow up, we make choices, hard choices. We have to dig deeply into ourselves to find those strengths, to be able to say no when we mean it, when it is our life. It depends on our... We have to be able to say no when our life needs to be uncompromised, when we have to protect our muse or our heart or our body. When we were children, life and love seemed simple and straightforward, and then we aged and we gained wisdom and experience, and learn to fight for what was important, what we weren't willing to lose. This morning, I've been talking about one woman's life and her life being a source of inspiration. We've been talking about a woman who grew up in a time of huge cultural transformation and who was instrumental in her influence on that culture because she knew how to say no when it was necessary, and yes, when her life depended on it. Who created poetry and art and music that literally healed hearts and saved lives. And this success cost her. If I look through the eyes of my role as a minister into Joni Mitchell's life, I see and I feel that pain that has been there all her life. I see her struggle to be the person who survived polio and deep depression and agonizing loneliness, excessive public scrutiny, abandonment, poverty, and extreme wealth. I see a woman who has survived a life of huge opportunity and huge sacrifice. And I see a woman clinging to her creative soul and fighting for the freedom to freely express it, fighting for her very survival. I see a woman who is imperfect, complex, uncompromising, and as self-aware as any of us could possibly be. A pragmatist who says our species, our human species, is doomed. And an optimist who says that she believes in miracles. Joni Mitchell, a child of God, working to get her soul free and return to the garden. Ultimately, the song Both Sides Now sums up her life and offers something to all of us. Our lives are up and down, our give and take, loss and gain. The thing to remember is that it is in the living every day, that transforms those parts into one whole.